The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus entered a village where a woman whose name was Martha welcomed him. She had a sister named Mary who sat beside the Lord at his feet listening to him speak. Martha, burdened with much serving, came to him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me by myself to do the serving? Tell her to help me." The Lord said to her in reply, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and worried about many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, and it will not be taken from her." The Gospel of the Lord. Good, so once again, good evening, brothers and sisters. Welcome to the blazing hot evening here. I have to give a hat tip to the ushers who stood outside in the heat in suit coats holding the door for everybody who walked in. You guys are going straight to heaven, okay? I knew a priest once. He stood up here on a day like this and he says, "If you think it's hotter than hell in here, you're wrong. Hell's hotter." That has nothing to do with my homily this evening. So here's a well-known gospel reading, the reading of Martha and Mary. This one isn't as well-known, say, as the prodigal son or the Good Samaritan, but I trust this is one that's familiar to all of you. And it's one of the most potent readings. There's more in a short span of text here than I can possibly talk about. I wish we could read from this text every year. So we're going to talk a little bit about this evening, about the pace of our lives and the peace of our lives. You don't need to be a priest to have people tell you how busy they are. People practically brag to you about how busy they are, don't they? They come up to you and they tell you that they're nothing but an incarnate to-do list. Nothing but busy, busy, busy. I suppose part of the idea there is that a life that's a flurry of activity suggests a life that's filled with purpose. And then they hear the Martha and the Mary story, and they think that Jesus is condemning being too busy. And they say, "Well, gosh, I can't sit at Jesus' feet like Mary, because I'm too busy doing a whole lot of things like Martha." Well, would it surprise you to know that this story is not about being too busy? This story is being about being distracted from what really matters. There's nothing wrong with being too busy. Do you know that? There are so many saints who were so busy, they almost worked themselves to death. Francis of Assisi, for example, died at the age of 44. Or Charles Borromeo, he died at the age of 46 and practically worked themselves to death. Mother Teresa of Calcutta, I might have mentioned this before, but her sisters were happy when she would leave the convent after coming to visit them because she was so busy. It was this flurry of activity they couldn't keep up. You know, it was like a relief. And so there's nothing at all wrong with being too busy. Jesus never says, "Martha, Martha, you're too busy." What does he say? He says, "Martha, Martha, you're anxious and worried. Only one thing is necessary." What's the one thing that's necessary? You know what it is? It's really simple. It's never to forget God's presence. Now, if we can learn how to practice the presence of God, your mind is with the Lord, your heart, your affections are with the Lord all day long. That's the one thing necessary. It says Martha was burdened with much serving. It's kind of a shame that they translate that word as burdened. The actual word that Luke uses in Greek is periespato. And periespato literally means distracted. You see, the problem here is that Martha is distracted from the one thing that matters. And that's why she's anxious and worried, ladies and gentlemen. Can I give you a little tiny bit of free advice here? If you're anxious and worried, about many things. I'm telling you this evening, it is a very good sign that you are not focused on the one thing that matters. And the converse of that's also true. When you're focused on the one thing that matters, you can practice the presence of God, right? If you can keep your mind and your heart in God's presence, nothing upsets you. I'm not exaggerating. I'm not saying it's not bad. I'm not saying you don't feel sad. But nothing disturbs your peace. You can be happy no matter what. This is the secret of peace. Very, very important gift that our Lord wants to give you. Another thing people misunderstand when they hear this reading is they think that Jesus is praising somebody who's taken it easy, namely Mary, who's sitting at Jesus' feet, and that Jesus is bad-mouthing Martha, who's doing all the work. Can I suggest to you this evening that that interpretation gets it precisely backwards? Would you believe that Mary, who's sitting at Jesus' feet, she's actually the one doing the hardest work? And that Martha, who's up running about, busy running, she's actually taking it easy. You want to know why? Because it's way easier to be about a flurry of activity than it is to focus on what matters. It's way easier to get caught up in projects, get caught up in work, get caught up in chores, get caught up in things you have to do, than it is to focus on building relationships. Isn't it easier? That's why, for example, people have plenty of time for everything but prayer. You notice that? Plenty of time for commuting, work, running around. No time for prayer. It's easier to focus on activities than it is to focus on building relationships with God and with others. Isn't it almost a stereotype that you'll find, for example, a man with a high-powered, high-functioning career, high-functioning, high-powered car, high-functioning, high-powered computer, and a dysfunctional, broken-down home life? It's almost a stereotype. Why? Because it's easy to focus on secondary things. That's why. And it's hard to focus on what truly matters. Mary's doing the heavy lifting. Ever tell you there was a survey, very fascinating, in USA Today that compared the happiness of low-income children with the happiness of high-income children? Now, don't get me wrong. I've got no praise for poverty. However, wasn't it interesting that the low-income kids were reported as being happier than the high-income kids, and the reason was their parents gave them more quality time. Not running around trying to do a million things. This is so important. We get into trouble when we forget who we are. You are a child of God. Made by God, come from God, going back to God. You got a limited span of days down here on this earth. You got commandments to live. You got people to love. You got tasks to be about. But first task of all is loving the Lord your God. And when it's all over, he's going to stand you before him in judgment. We forget that. And when we forget that, we get into trouble. Ever since Adam ate the apple. Ever since Cain killed Abel. Right on down to the present day. We get into trouble and we forget who we are. It's like the professor used to tell me back every year at the beginning of seminary. He'd say the same thing. He'd say, gentlemen, the first thing is to make the first thing the first thing. Okay? And that's what we want to do as well. Now, just one little thought today to help you, motivate you, hopefully a little bit, motivate you to do it. And this comes from our first reading today. Mysterious first reading. Can I tell you just one little thing as an aside about the first reading? The first reading is a real interesting example of the Holy Trinity showing up in the Old Testament. This is just an aside, okay? But the Holy Trinity, you think that comes from the New Testament? You know, it shows up in the Old Testament, and one of the best places it shows up was in the first reading today. Here's how. God shows up for dinner at Abraham's house. That's the first reading. How do you know it's God who shows up for dinner? Because the word that they used for the Lord is the same word that God told Moses when he appeared to Moses in the burning bush. Remember the story of Moses appearing in the burning bush and Moses turns to God and says, "What's your name?" And God says, "This is my name. My name is I am the one who is." Well, that exact same word is the word that's used to describe who shows up for dinner at Abraham's house. Okay, so God shows up for dinner. Abraham looks up, looks down, looks up again. Suddenly, there's not one person there, but three persons there. So Abraham talks to God. First time he talks to God, he speaks to him like he's just one person. He says, "You, will you let me do you a favor?" Second time he talks to God, he talks to a plurality of people. He says, "Can I make y'all dinner?" Right? Second person, plural. So it's really interesting. One God, three divine persons, all the way back in the book of Genesis. That's just an aside, though. Here's what matters from the first reading. What matters is that Abraham is the one who's the beneficiary. See, Abraham, he runs around in a flurry of activity. He's trying to be at the service of the Lord. Question for you here this evening. Does God need somebody to make him dinner? No. God doesn't need dinner. Abraham thinks he's doing God a favor. God's doing Abraham a favor. Because there's only one thing in all the world Abraham ever wanted. All he wanted was that he could have a son with his wife, Sarah. And so Abraham goes about this flurry of activity, puts himself in God's presence, and you know what happens at the end of the reading? Abraham's told that Sarah's going to have a child. It's all he ever wanted. Abraham thought he was doing God a favor. God was doing Abraham a favor the whole way. Now, take that same idea and use it as a lens to interpret the gospel reading. You got Martha. She's running around working, working, working. I bet you Martha thinks that she's doing Jesus a favor. Question for you here this evening. Does Jesus need somebody to make him dinner? No. This is the guy who knows how to multiply loaves and fishes. He doesn't need anybody to make him dinner. You ever stop to consider that it wasn't Martha who was doing Jesus a favor? It was Jesus who wanted to do Martha a favor. But he couldn't do Martha a favor unless Martha gave him her mind and heart. As if to say, "Martha, Martha, please, I got blessings to give to you, but I can't give them without your cooperation. Please, give me your mind. Give me your heart." And, you know, this is the same thing. When I tell you about living in the presence of God, it means you got to spend time in prayer. And then that sounds like one more thing you got to do. Yeah, I suppose it is one more thing you got to do. But God can't give you his blessings unless you give him that time in which only he can be with you. You know, you come to Mass. It's great that you're here in the 112 degree heat or whatever it is out there. But please don't think you're doing God a favor by being here. God's doing you a favor. You're about to receive the most sublime union between God and your soul that is possible this side of heaven. God's the one doing you a favor, and something like that happens every time you put yourself in God's presence. Here's an image that I like to use to try to describe what God does for you when you turn to God in prayer. Okay, imagine this. Imagine a sailboat. I might have used this image before, but I can't remember if I have. Imagine a sailboat, and it's trying to navigate its way through these great big sharp rocks. And the poor guy driving the sailboat, he's got to turn that sailboat around, doesn't want to hit one of those rocks, or the sailboat's going to go down. Okay, now, imagine that all the rocks are the problems in your life. And imagine that you're the one trying to steer that sailboat, and you cry out for help, help, help. It's so hard to navigate through all these problems. Well, there's two ways you can be helped. You could get an expert who could tell you how to turn and how to move the sail and get you around all those rocks. That's one way. But imagine if somebody could lift up the level of the lake. You could sail clean over all your troubles. That's kind of like what happens when you turn to God in prayer. He doesn't take your troubles away from you. He raises you up high so that you become greater than your troubles. But he can't do it for you unless you give him your mind and your heart, unless you give him the one thing that matters. You see, this gospel isn't about being too busy. Being too busy isn't the problem. The problem is when you fail to focus on the Lord the one thing that truly matters. So don't try to fit God into your day. Try rather to fit your day into God. What do you worry about anyway? Who are you trying to please? Seek first the Lord and his kingship over you, and everything else will be given to you besides. That's what it means to choose the better part, and it will never be taken away from you. Amen.